Hi, and welcome to At Any Rate, JP Morgan's global research podcast, where we take a look at some of the drivers behind the biggest trends and themes across fixed income, currencies, and commodity markets. I'm Francis Diamond from the European Rate Strategy Team, and today I'm joined by Jay Barry, co-head of US Rate Strategy, to discuss the recent Fed and BOE March meetings and the implications for rate markets. We're recording this podcast on March 22nd, and our comments today are based on our recent US Treasury Market Daily and post-BOE strategy publications, which are available to institutional clients of JP Morgan on our JP Morgan Markets website. So, Jay, let's start with the Fed. The markets interpreted the Fed dovishly, even though the Fed had raised its growth and inflation forecast for this year, and the dots for both 2025 and the longer run moved higher. So what do you think was really dovish in this outcome?
Hey, Francis, thanks for having me today. So you're right. I think it was an interesting set of circumstances on Wednesday. And one could argue that the dots reflect, I think, the Fed's embrace of the supply side of the economy. That increased labor supply is supporting stronger trend growth over the near term, and perhaps even a higher neutral policy rate as well, given what it's projected for the next few years. All else equal, this doesn't seem dovish necessarily, but I think looking at this year in particular, it is notable that even amid a revision higher to the growth forecast and to the inflation forecast, that the median dot for 2024 still shows three cuts. Although to be fair, the distribution's tightened and it would only take one dot moving from three to two to kind of bring that down to two. But nonetheless, this implies a more accommodative real Fed funds rate than previously considered. So I think on margin, that was dovish. But for us, the real most important part of the outcome on Wednesday afternoon was the press conference itself in a number of ways. First and foremost, Chair Powell's prepared remarks before the Q&A were largely unchanged from the January press conference, which to me is a statement in itself, given the evolution of the data flow over that intervening 7 weeks. Moreover, Powell expressed continued confidence in the disinflationary process, even in the face of what we saw with January and February inflation data. He argued that seasonality certainly contributed to the outsized increase in CPI in January, and he further had confidence that market rents would show up in housing inflation data, but it was just a matter of time, not a matter of if. And finally, when asked about financial conditions, because I think that's been a pretty important topic for markets recently, indicating that perhaps the Fed might be less likely to ease or less comfortable easing because financial conditions have eased, Powell said that financial conditions were still restraining economic activity. And I get it that the Fed's FCIG models with a 3-year look back shows that financial conditions are tighter than they were at the onset of the tightening cycle. But that last reading was in January and financial conditions have broadly eased since then. So this really gives little sense that the Fed is worried that financial conditions and the easing in financial conditions are one reason to wait a little bit more time to actually start lowering rates. So in this context, for me, it's little surprising that on Wednesday afternoon, the yield curve bullishly steepened in kind of a more contained format. Front-end yields falling 8 to 9 basis points, long-end yields remaining relatively unchanged, reflective, we think, of a reaction function for the Fed that remains dovish even in the face of stronger growth, firmer than expected inflation, and then even easier financial conditions as well.
Thanks, Jay. So I guess it seems fair to say the Fed's probably ready to ease, but might actually ease less. So how do you think that changes your thinking about the Treasury market? And I know you've been holding carry trades, long-end steepeners. Do you still think that's the right expression? And what about tips? Do you think there's anything you could see there that works in this environment?
Thanks, Francis. I think those are both really important points. And certainly, the outcome of the meeting lowers the bar for a June cut, which has been our expectation. But to your right, to an extent, it actually raises the risk that this is a shallower easing cycle. So a lot of what we've been focused on with respect to our positioning has been positioning for the markets to behave as they have prior to other Fed easing cycles over the last 30 years, whether they've been bigger full-blown easing cycles or shallower easing cycles. So we've decided to hone in on just those shallower easing cycles, namely the 1995 and 2019 episodes in which the Fed only cut by 75 basis points. And interestingly, in both of those cycles, yields still declined and the long end of the curve steepened heading into the first cut, On average, the decline in five-year yields was by about 125 basis points in the 6 months prior to the first cut, with a larger rally occurring prior to the 1995 cycle than prior to 2019. So this on a headline basis would say, hey, there's really significant room for yields to decline from here, considering that they've basically been tracking unchanged for the last 3 months. That does miss the point that we are about 50 basis points off the peak we saw in the fall. But nonetheless, even, you know, sort of haircutting it by that amount, it would indicate that there's room for yields to decline from current levels. And then similarly on the curve, we find that the curve movements were tracking the 1995 cycle until the data flow shifted in February. And when we look at the behavior of the curve in each of those other two instances, there's a definitive steepening trend as well in the months prior to the first cut at the long end, but the magnitudes differ greatly. Notably, 530 steepened about 75 basis points prior to the first ease in 1995 and then traded in a range in the coming months after that, while in 2019, it steepened by only about 25 basis points in the months leading up to the first cut. And to me, this makes sense to a certain extent. In 1995, the Fed was easing into an economy that was benefiting from rising productivity and trend growth rates, and that supported a rising neutral policy rate. So effectively, the Fed could just stay on hold and was passively working its way into less restrictive policy over time, and that was supporting a steeper curve over and above the easing of policy rates. Conversely, in 19, the Fed was easing preemptively in order to better anchor inflation expectations in an environment where core inflation was struggling to get back to 2% from the downside. So arguably, the current cycle, I think in my mind, looks more like 1995 than it does 2019. Thus, this would still be supportive of further steepening at the long end as well. So I think overall, you know, we still think that market participants in the rates market, it makes sense for them to consider markets behaving as they have around other Fed easing cycles, even the shallower ones with intermediate yields declining and the long end of the curve steepening, but not as much as you'd expect in a full-blown easing cycle overall as well. So that's kind of our take on it. We continue to think that those are sort of the right sort of positions for this cycle. And in the meantime, if we're going to be probably trading in a range until the time of the first cut or for the next few weeks as we approach the next set of event risk with payrolls and CPI, finding ways to earn carry make most sense as well, which is, of course, really challenging in an inverted yield curve environment. But we like sort of more careful ways of approaching the markets in a way to earn positive carry. And to your point, it's the TIPS market where that makes the most sense in our minds. So certainly yields are sitting at or near the upper end of the range that we've held for the last 3 months. But, you know, overweighting nominal treasuries at this point is a negative carry trade, whereas we know it's actually a positive carry trade in the TIPS market. So from that perspective, also from the perspective that TIPS are actually looking somewhat cheap on a break-even basis in our fair value framework, and we think this is supportive of adding in the five-year sector and the TIPS curve as well to position for a positive carry in an environment in which rates are likely to decline as we approach the first cut.
Okay, thanks. That makes sense. So obviously, we talked a lot about rate expectations, the rates market. Maybe we should shift to the balance sheet. Obviously, Chair Powell talked about making announcements to slow QT fairly soon. Has this changed your view on the timing in terms of when to expect a slowdown in QT? How long do you think QT should go on, and what implications does that have for US rates in your view?
That was one mild surprise for us. And I think what little we learned on QT, Francis, was definitely dovish relative to our baseline expectations. So we came in expecting to hear little on QT in the press conference, but to find out a lot more in the minutes of the March meeting. But interestingly, the chair actually openly addressed this in his prepared remarks, saying it will be appropriate to slow the pace of runoff fairly soon, as you just said. So previously, we had thought that the Fed would announce a slowing of QT at the June meeting for implementation at the beginning of July. But given what we learned earlier this week, we interpret this to mean we should expect an announcement at the May FOMC meeting. And given that the meeting falls at the beginning of the month and that most Treasury and MBS runoff occurs in mid-month and onward, we think it can also be implemented in May as well. So relative to kind of our previous baseline expectations, this would imply probably $60 billion less in Treasury runoff relative to our prior baseline expectations. So an earlier slowing of QT with slightly less runoff than we expected before. And we think it's really got limited implications for the rates markets overall. You know, I think all of our work has pointed to the fact that the stock of the Fed's holdings matter for both the level of long-term rates and the shape of the yield curve, but in a pretty limited fashion. And just for example, every 1 percentage point decline in the Fed's share of holdings of the Treasury market should be worth about 3 or 4 basis points of yield curve steepening, better anchoring long-term rates at higher levels. So this $60 billion in the context of a $27 trillion market is pretty small, all considered, and I think is going to have a limited impact on the term structure of rates. But it is interesting here as we consider this that the timeline for ending QT is not being dictated by bringing reserves down to a share of GDP, say something like 8 or 9% that many of us have been using, considering that that's a more stable equilibrium where reserves will no longer be abundant, but will be ample and considerably lower than they are right now. Instead, the chair's comments seemed to indicate that they have been chastened by the events of September of 2019, in which money market rates moved substantially higher for a couple of days when reserves briefly dipped under $1.5 trillion and fell to a lower share of GDP. So here he's saying that the behavior of the money markets and probably SOFR and the Fed funds rate will be influencing the Fed's decision on the timeline for QT. And I think there's a pretty high degree of conservatism there with respect to QT and the balance sheet. And to me, it's just interesting in being on this podcast with you today that as we consider this, this is a different tack than is being taken by, say, the Bank of England, where, you know, the Bank of England certainly seems more, you know, comfortable. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, that they would rather the banking system determine the price of reserves. And I think we've seen that from the Bank of Canada as well. The Fed here is saying they'd rather have an extra level of layer of reserves over and above the baseline minimum just because they don't want to have a repeat of what happened in 2019. But we've spoken a lot about the US so far, and certainly the Fed was an important event on Wednesday, but we had the Bank of England on Thursday morning, Francis. And so the MPC kept rates on hold, which we'd expected. But the vote shifted to 8-1, with the hawkish dissent and the three-way split from February dropped. Is this a significant change in your view? And further from that, does it impact how you were thinking about the Bank of England over the coming months as well?
Yeah, thanks, Joe, for the question there. I think it's definitely probably worth just comparing a little bit the Fed and the MPC this week in terms of the dimensions we could have seen, any surprises or any change information. And as obviously, as opposed to the Fed, where you got the forecast, you had a press conference, the March meeting for the MPC is really much more limited. We just get the vote, we just get the decision, and we just get a statement. There is no forecast change, there is no Q&A. So really, that probably meant the dimensions we were thinking here in terms of potential surprises were much more limited. And as you say, Joe, though, you're right to point out, the vote was probably the surprise in our view, in terms of removing the hawkish dissent we'd seen previously. And I think that is a small step in the eventual direction of travel towards easing. But I don't think that's enough on its own. The minutes did state there's a range of views amongst those members who voted for unchanged rates around the strength of inflation persistence. And I think that doesn't immediately shift our base case view for August. But I think we have to appreciate removing hawkish dissent does mean the time of the expected first rate cut is drawing nearer. And I do think that means June is a possibility, and a probably very real possibility versus our call, as I said, for a first cut in August. But there is still a clear data dependency, and the MPC is still telling us wage growth and other measures of inflation are important. There's probably one other factor that we should pick up on. As we did get some commentary from Governor Bailey in the media following the Bank of England meeting, which has obviously gained some attention. And I think we wouldn't view the comments signaling an imminent cut at the next meeting in May. Some of the commentary is really just repeating what Bailey had said at the Treasury Select Committee a month or so ago, i.e., the idea that the Bank of England doesn't have to wait for headline inflation to get to the 2% target before it starts to ease. And I think our view is, whilst the market has focused a bit on the timing of his comments, our view is probably May to actually have the first cut is still pretty difficult. There's only one more round of inflation and labour market data between now and then. And we saw no change in the statements at the meeting in March from February in terms of the rhetoric or the forward guidance, with the Bank of England pretty clearly stating it's still on neutral. So I think overall, yes, maybe we could think about a possibility of a slightly earlier start to easing than the current view of August, but we still think the bar for a rate cut in May it's quite high, Jane.
Thanks for that. So we're still on the journey towards easing, but it doesn't seem like the timing is any earlier than we previously expected, considering what happened here. Thanks for that. And now if we can sort of turn to markets on the back of that, how are you thinking about UK rate markets following the BOE? Is it now the time to be long duration in your mind?
Simple answer is probably not, Jay. Although like we've discussed for your markets in Treasury space, I think we do acknowledge that we need to have some form of recognition that rates are going to move lower and look at trades at work in that environment. But as you said, it's difficult to find carry or positive carry trades given the current slope of the yield curve, particularly when there's still a bit of, let's say, ambiguity, not just around the start of rate cuts, but also the potential pace of rate cuts. So from my perspective, I don't think the delivery from the Bank of England is a clear enough signal to turn bullish outright on duration. Yes, yields have rallied. They're now back at the bottom end of the range they've been trading in since early February. We think we need a signal to really start to think we can break through this range. And probably the Bank of England on its own is just not a strong enough signal. I mean, as you mentioned already, the next sort of event, not just for US rate markets, but probably for sterling rate markets, is the upcoming US labor market data and inflation data early next month. And I think we still expect some degree of near-term range trading. We still don't have great visibility on exactly how to think about the level of Bank of England terminal rates in the current environment. I think the medium-term view is probably we still want to trade with a bit of a bullish bias, a bit of a long-duration bias. But I think I'd feel more comfortable entering those sorts of positions if we start to see downside surprises either in inflation data more broadly, globally, or labour market data in the UK as we go through the next wave of data releases. We do like proxy bullish trades. We do like various forms of front-end money market flatteners. We can find various structures that are positive carry. But for now, still think it's a little bit too early to get particularly long duration or particularly bullish on sterling rates, to be honest.
That sounds a lot like here in the US, although I guess, you know, the one strong difference in UK versus US is while UK yields are sitting at the lower end of their range, US yields are sitting closer to the upper end of their range. So maybe on a cross-market basis, this is more supportive of US versus UK. If maybe I can turn to inflation markets, since we were talking US tips before, what are your thoughts on UK inflation markets right now as well?
Well, I think it's interesting, Jay, and a lot of focus will probably be on headline inflation in the UK over the coming months, because we expect the UK will probably be the first DM country where headline inflation actually drops below target. So the expectation is probably for the May and June releases, headline CPI will drop below 2% to high side ones. But this is really mechanical. This is really reflecting a 12% drop in household energy bills. This is probably not something that is a big surprise to markets or to the Bank of England, but I think it will get attention. It will get focus, and it may well act as a bit of a external pressure in terms of using this idea of headline inflation below target to in terms of how the Bank of England should react to that. But I think from an inflation market view, given this backdrop of a slow decline in headline inflation, with a sense that the Bank of England isn't going to focus on headline in the short term, we know, and they've been very clear in terms of what they're focusing on in terms of their measures of inflation persistence. So that's core service inflation and the exclusion-based measure the Bank of England has recently referred to. That's tightness in the labour market and that's wage growth. And to be honest, Jay, it doesn't look like those measures are going to be shifting fast enough, as we've already discussed, to think about a May cut being a possibility. So I think given that backdrop of declining inflation prints, but probably a Bank of England that isn't immediately responding, that probably does mean break-evens at the front end of the curve should be moving lower. So we are tactically short 2-year break-evens in the UK. I think it's a more tactical view. I think certainly it's more of a front-end view in terms of just the dynamics of the effect of the prints and the headline prints falling. Because further out the curve, you've really seen intermediate break-evens be reasonably range-bound, reasonably stable. I don't think there's any real expectation here of unwarranted or risk premium appearing in the intermediate part of the break-even curve from Bank of England policy decisions. I think we're looking at a relative range-bound environment. So I think we look to be neutral and probably just play intermediate break-evens within their more recent ranges rather than say there's a clear Bank of England or policy-driven view there, to be honest.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Francis. So we covered a lot in the last 20 minutes or so. And I think what we learned from both of the central bank meetings this week is that we kind of are, you know, still on this journey towards easing, though the timing of those eases may seem to be slightly earlier in the US relative to the UK. The similarities, though, are, I think, the way we're both approaching the market, which is we're looking at way markets typically behave heading into even shallower easing cycles. And like carry trading and like curve positions that benefit from that sort of shift. But interestingly, I think is inflation is probably the one place where we're a little bit different. Again, probably owing to where both of these currencies are with respect to their relative ranges. And we like effectively US front end inflation over UK front end inflation right now. And there's a ton of event risk coming up, which really kicks off with probably the March employment report about 2 weeks from now as well. So that's been great, Francis. Thanks for having me today. Thanks to all of our listeners for listening today as well. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan Research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on March 22nd, 2024.